to talk to you guys today about serving and what it looks like to serve in the church, because serving is so important to me, and it's so important to me, and I believe it's important to God that we all become activated and we all play the role that God has given us inside the church. So today I'm going to be in Hebrews chapter 12, and I'm going to read you the text, and I'm going to kind of lay the scene out for you. Verses 1 through 3. It says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, that you will not grow weary and lose heart." When the author of Hebrews wrote this, he was talking and he kind of had the idea of a stadium in mind. He was telling them about a stadium being full and imagine a race. And maybe you're thinking, well, I've never been in a stadium. I might have been in an NFL stadium. But like, how does that apply to me in the church? And it makes me think. I'm going to sit by you, Mr. Scott. I'm going to sit right here. And it just makes me think about how when we sit down in this stadium and we watch these sports go on and we see these athletes do all these great things, but we come into the church and we sit down in a chair. And then I look around and I'm like, God, how am I able to preach? But then I look around when I sit in this position where I am completely surrounded by a cloud of witnesses of people that have confessed that Christ is Lord. And so if you're sitting in whatever seat you're in right now, you are surrounded. You're surrounded by God. You're surrounded by his people. And you have a purpose this morning. So I wanted you to just imagine if we were in a stadium. Imagine the race is about to begin. Everybody's on the starting line. The guy with the gun, he shoots it off in the air. Gates go down, nobody takes off. That is the position of these people that the author of Hebrews is writing about. These guys had professed that Christ was Lord of their life, yet they had done nothing. They were standing there, they were stagnant, and they weren't utilizing the gifts that God had given them. And so I want to talk to you about today is running the race of serving. We serve together. And as I was writing this message, I'm like, well, he's talking about a race. We're running a race that Jesus has marked out before us. We're running. So what's the first thing we have to do in a race? We run. It's pretty simple. But I want to share a story with you about running. You see, when I was in college, when I graduated high school, I weighed about 195 pounds. And most of y'all have heard my story about I competed collegiately in judo. I was a 2-time national champion. I'd won several state championships. But when I graduated high school and I weighed 195 pounds, which is about what I weigh now, when you fight at that weight class, everybody's like 6'8". And as you can tell, I am not 6'8". I am not Cody Taylor, okay? So my only option was lose weight. And my uncle was the one that has taught me martial arts since I was 2 years old. He was my coach in college. And he said, "JJ, if you want to fight at this collegiate level, you're going to have to lose some weight." I'm like, "Yes, sir." And our practices, we practiced Monday through Friday, 5 days a week. We got the weekends off. But Monday through Friday, our practices would be no shorter than 3 hours. Sometimes they would be 4. If my uncle was really fired up, we would have a 5-hour practice. But those were very rare. Normally, those were if we, like, were not respectful or anything. But before we were even allowed to start the 3-hour practice, I would have to put on a hoodie and I would have to go put on the sweatpants. And it didn't matter if it was summer or winter, I would go and I would run 6 miles before I was even allowed to begin my 3-hour practice. And he would tell me, "You have to get it done in under an hour. And if you don't get it under an hour, you're going to go run an extra mile." I'm like, "Yes, sir, I will get it done in the first time, because I'd rather do it right and do it light than wrong and do it long." So I would run. And it wasn't until I began to run that the weight began to come off. And that's what he's talking about right here when he says, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. I had to run. If I wanted to lose the weight, I wanted to lose about 20 pounds. I wanted to fight at about 178 pounds and 175 pounds. But in order to do that, I had to be active. Running is a verb. And so if we are going to be active in the church, we have to make a decision that today I'm going to run. I'm going to be active. I will do my part because nothing ever gets accomplished in a passive position. Nothing ever gets done. I know, contrary to popular belief, pastors don't lay around all week and go fishing and go to St. Louis Cardinals baseball games all week long, and then they come up here, Pastor Brian opens his Bible and says, oh, okay, we're going to be in Leviticus today, church. This is what we're going to preach on. No, it does not work like that. He is very actively spending a long time with God and coffee, and he is intentionally focusing on what he wants to deliver and what he feels like God is wanting to speak through him. Because if he didn't, what he would just be coming up and he would be doing it out of his own will, and God really can't move in that position. So when he's intentional, God, speak to me and let it be an overflow by speaking out of me. And so that is what pastors do. Or you might think of it like nobody loses weight by sitting on a couch. I wasn't going to lose the 20 pounds that I wanted to lose by sitting on the couch and eating potato chips, okay? Or you think somebody doesn't become the CEO of a Fortune 500 company by just standing to the side and letting everybody else do the work, letting everybody else cast vision, let everybody else do this, and then they just come in with their entitled attitudes and come become CEOs. No, it doesn't work like that. They had to be hands-on from the ground up. Or maybe it's like, you don't get a degree by not going to class. Miss Carissa just got her bachelor's degree, but it took her getting and using effort, not just sitting at home and then having Toby do her homework. No, it didn't work like that. She had to put in the work, and because of that, yeah, it may have took longer than somebody else that did it in 3 years or somebody that 4 years, but what matters is that she did it. And that she was committed to it. And those are the things that we have to do when we are inside the church. We have to be committed, especially if we call ourselves Christians. Because God has been so good to us. And like he's been so, so good to me as I was sitting in that chair and I'm saying, yeah, I don't know how I became a pastor. Like it's amazing to me. You 4 years ago, 5 years ago, you never could have told me that I was going to be a pastor of any capacity, youth pastor, whatever. You never could have told me that I was going to be involved in the church. But when I got saved, when the Holy Spirit came on me, I just had this feeling inside me, I'm supposed to do something. Like why am I just sitting in this chair? And then I get to know Ryan Anderson, and the first thing I ever do church-related was park cars. That don't seem too church-related. But it was a space where God could use me. And that obedience turned into something else where I began to welcome people and shake their hands. And then that turned into doing the announcements. Just because I was obedient, and I just began to take small steps. And I was obedient, and God would give me a little bit more and a little bit more. And that's all that we have to do. And God wants to use you. So we have to run. But you're like, I don't know what I can do. So just real quick, I want to tell you about finding your sweet spot in the church. The first question that you got to ask is, what gifts and talents has God given you? Are you good with like babies? Can you change a diaper? Like, we are not on a shortage. We are on a shortage of nursery workers. So, like, if you love changing diapers and you love, like, rocking the babies, like, that is a perfect ministry for you. Or maybe you're like, I don't really like babies, but I like when they get a little bit older. Like, when they're 8 and I ain't got to change their diapers no more, like, I can boss them around. I can tell them what to do. Hey, quit picking your nose. Pay attention, okay? Like, these are things that I can do. Well, if God has given you a gift to be able to minister kids in that capacity, you can be involved in Life Kids. Or maybe you're like, well, I've got a pretty good voice, I think. Well, then you can go and you can talk to Pastor Ryan and he can talk about getting involved with the worship team. You see, there are parts that we can play. You're like, I can make better coffee than the people out there make. They don't make it very strong. I can do better than that. Well, great. If you can do it better, we would love for you to do it. And so you're thinking, well, these are just small things, but they are so important into the big scheme of what we do here, making people feel welcome. When you give somebody a warm cup of coffee, you are basically giving them Jesus because that puts them in a good mood. So don't ever underestimate the things that God can do through you like that, okay? The second question is, what do you get excited about? What gets you excited? Are you motivated? Like when you wake up and you're like, I cannot wait to share the good news of Jesus with some kids. That's why you can be in Life Kids. What gets you excited? Or the third question is, what opportunities? I've already talked about those opportunities that we have. We've got coffee shop. We've got Life Kids. We've got the worship team. We've got parking lot team. You can just open the door for somebody. Last night, Greg Farrell, it was pouring down rain as people were coming in, and he was running out there with an umbrella and meeting them at their door and making and guiding them back to the church. That way they wouldn't get wet. These things are so important, and sometimes we just overlook it, especially sometimes us as leaders. Like, sometimes we can take for granted the small things, like Michael Cowgill up there and all the production team. The only time they ever get credit or any kind of notice is when they mess up and the lights are going crazy and the words ain't on the screen. That's when they're noticed. But what Michael does is so valuable, because the lyrics are on the screen, your hands are free and you can lift and you can worship and you can surrender to God. And that wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for people like him that are upstairs sacrificing, being behind scenes. And maybe that's you. You're like, I don't like being out front. You're not going to catch me on the stage. But you're like, I'm a kind of a behind the scenes person. Well, that is a great opportunity for you to serve, and we can help you get plugged into that. And maybe you're thinking, well, I just don't know, like, if I'm very smart at that. But that's what I want to talk about, living in your sweet spot. The first one I want to tell you about is called comfort zone. This is the place where you know you can do it. For Pastor Brian, this is playing guitar. Like, y'all hear him every weekend. He's up here like he's Axl Rose or something, and he is just slaying the guitar. And he is amazing at it. He doesn't have to listen. We can say, Pastor Brian, we're going to do this new song. He's like, okay, let me listen to it. Listens to it, and he just goes, no, and he's got it. Like, that is comfort zone 101 for Pastor Brian. The second one that I want to talk to you about is false expectations. And again, I'm going to use Pastor Brian as an example. A couple of false expectations that Pastor Brian might have. The first one, maybe he wants to be a WWE superstar. I don't know. But that might be a little far. It might be a far reach. But his number one false expectation that he might have is he wants to be the general manager of the St. Louis Cardinals. And false expectations, that's where you wish you could do it, but God's not really calling you to do it. Like, Pastor Brian wishes every single week, I could coach better than them. I could get us all the good players that we need. But God is saying, hey, dude, stick to pastoring. Let them be the general managers. But then there's the spot. The third one is where we want to be, and that's where we want to be in our sweet spot. That's the place where God works through you. And I asked Mr. Mark if he would just come up for just a couple minutes and just share about what he just experienced and what he just went through, where God worked through him and his family. You guys make him feel welcome, just real quick. Just tell him real quick about what y'all just experienced.
So I'll bring him up and have you speak up here a whole lot better than I can. But what I experienced this past week was went to a missions trip, construction ministry up in Buffalo, New York. Mission is 8 Days of Hope, which go in and normally rebuild after disasters. This one here was just loving on Buffalo, New York. Opened up a warehouse there in the city. A lot of churches come together and wanted to love on New York, Buffalo, New York. So went up, and what we ended up doing was coming together and building a deck and a ramp on a house. This was one project out of over 300 projects over 125 houses that got carpenter work and like 300 and something homes that got work on them at some point in time, whether it was just raking leaves or putting a new roof on a house. But this project, like I said, was building a deck and a ramp for a lady that had been in a wheelchair for the last 3 years. She's 34 years old, had a stroke, left-sided paralysis, and she had been on the inside of her house. The only time that she could come out was whenever two personnel come in off a wheelchair bus and carried her down the flight of steps to get outside. So this right here opened up a huge opportunity for her to get out of the house. Here she is, 34 years old, in a wheelchair, can't move on her own without somebody helping her. So was able to get a front porch where she can get outside into the sunshine, and then actually a ramp to get out of the house and get onto the sidewalk and be able to be mobile on her own. And Chris is going to tell you this next story because this is knowing that sweet spot, knowing that you're exactly in God's will, being exactly where God has called you to be, and yes, maybe comfort zone, but also stepping outside your comfort zone to get into something new that God wants you to be, and knowing that you are in His direct and absolute will where He wants you, and divine appointments just roll off of that. She's going to share about this one divine appointment here real quick.
Well, my part of going, I'm not a carpenter. I don't do any kind of building or anything, but there's like people that come, 1,500 people, men, women, children, all ages came from across the country. Everybody worked together, doing all kinds of jobs, cooking, cleaning, yard work, you know. So this lady's house that we were assigned to, like I said, I don't do carpentry, but I did a lot of praying. I did a lot of helping with small jobs, and I got to see God connect the dots. We had a group of people that came from Western New York to help us with this project, and some of the people that helped us actually went to help another lady that needed some painting work done. She used her home as a daycare and had lead paint on her home. So she was so thankful that 8 Days of Hope came to help her. She was actually going to be fined in a short period of time if she didn't have her home completed. And she just didn't have the means to do it on her own. So whenever the volunteers from 8 Days of Hope came to paint her house, she said she was so thankful, so grateful for how God helped her and blessed her. She wanted to pay it forward. So some of the volunteers that had been at our home and had met the lady in the wheelchair volunteered with painting her home. They said, "We know a lady that could use a wheelchair." And the woman said, "You know, well, my mother had passed away 2 years ago, and I had been unable to let this go just because of the sadness and grief she had carried. And whenever the volunteers came and blessed her so much, she was just overjoyed. So she gave this this wheelchair, which was, you know, a huge blessing. She brought it over to our homeowner that we worked for. And it was dots that only God could connect. He uses everybody, mm-hmm. everybody that's, right. that's got, you know, we've got His light inside of us. And so, you know, just by going, just by getting out and doing what you can, you know, this lady was hugely blessed with a wheelchair ramp and a wheelchair. The other lady was blessed with just people coming to show God's love. And it all worked together where, you know, we were hugely blessed just to see God's love poured out in tangible ways. So thank y'all for letting me share.
That's good. Thank y'all. That is a perfect example of God working through a couple to minister to people. You just heard Miss Chris say that she's not a carpenter. Like, she doesn't build things like that. That is really outside of her comfort zone. But nothing ever grows inside of comfort. It's when we step out of our comfort that we begin to grow and begin to flourish and we get to see God actually work through us. Because see, if you stay in your comfort zone where you know you can do it, you don't need God. You can just do it under your own will and your own power because you know you can do it. But when you step out of that comfort zone, that's when you're like, okay, God, I might be able to do this, but I really don't know. But God, I'm going to need you to work through me. And that's for me, that's when I preach. Like, this is not easy for me. It is definitely outside of my comfort zone. When I was in college, I took public speaking and I failed. I literally failed. I had to drop the class towards the end so I wouldn't get the F on my GPA. And so just to know that God works through me now in this capacity, he can do it for you too. There was something I saw in this, and it's called the us. They kept saying the word us. Let us. Let us. Let us. In this text. And it just kept sticking out to me. And I'm like, we run better together. I told you the story about we would run 6 miles before practice every single day. And for a while, it was me running 6 miles by myself. And it would be hard. It was very, very hard. There'd be times I'm like, mile 4, I'm like, I'm just going to walk. I'm just going to walk. But I had about 7 teammates on my team. And if you don't know anything about judo, judo is a sport where, yeah, you've got teammates, but when it comes to competition time, it is literally just you and your opponent, one-on-one. Whoever gets thrown on their back first loses. Sometimes matches would be 2 minutes long, they'd be 2 seconds long, or 5 minutes long. But when we would be training and we would be running our 6 miles, if I would get tired, my teammate would say, hey, come on, man, we just got another mile, you can do this. I'm like, okay, I got this. And I would keep running. Because I've learned that if you want to run fast, if I want to get my 6 miles done really quick, I'll just run by myself and I'll just sprint and whoever's behind me can just be at their own pace. But no, if you want to run fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, run together. Run together. So not only do we serve together, but we run together. And so as I was preparing this message, it kind of turned into a 3D life message like Pastor Brian always preaches, make a decision, discipline, and then you reach your destination. So the first one we got to do is we got to make a decision, and we're going to decide today that we're going to run. We're going to serve. We're going to run together. We're going to serve together. We're going to do this together as a church the way that God has designed it. But that means we got to have some disciplines. The first discipline that we have is abstain. Abstain. Be in the same text. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Pastor Ryan got me addicted to a game. Not the kind of video game that you're thinking of with the console, but it's on my phone. And I really like this game. It's called Wordscapes. And maybe some of you like that game. Maybe I've gotten you addicted to that game. But the cool thing about this is you get like 5 or 6 letters and you got to like try to find all these words in the crosswords. It's like a crossword puzzle, but you don't have hints. And so sometimes I just make up words. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that numble was a word. But I learned this new word. It was called aesthetic. And I love this game because when you come up with these words, it'll also give you the dictionary definition of it. And so I will learn these words and I'll put it in my phone. I'll be like, okay, maybe I can use this in a message sometime. I'll use this. And so this word aesthetic, it means the characteristic of the practice of rigorous self-discipline. And it said usually to do with religious purposes. And I was like, man, that is it. That is what Christianity is. It is aesthetic. If I'm going to abstain, I have to have self-discipline. As you all know, as I just shared earlier, I lost all that weight by running. I lost 20 pounds. I normally walked around about 175 pounds. Well, I had already won the national championship and things like that, and then I got an invitation to go fight at the U.S. Open. And I got the bright idea because even at fighting at 175, everybody was normally like 6'2", 6'3". So I was always the shortest in my weight class. I'm like, okay, the U.S. Open, this is the big time. This is bigger than nationals. So I want to do well. I told my uncle, I said, Dr. Ray, I want to drop down to 155 pounds. So I was going to have to lose another 20 pounds. And the most important part of this is, it was 2 days until weigh-in. So 2 days before my official weigh-in for the U.S. Open, I weighed 175 pounds. And my goal was in 2 days, I was going to lose 20 pounds and weigh 155 pounds. So I made this decision. He said, man, you can do it. I said, okay, we're in Miami, Florida. And it's July, so it's like 100 degrees. So here we go. Trash bags, put on two or three hoodies, two or three sweatpants, go out to the beach, I just start running. I'm like, it's hot. I got the hood on my head. I look like I'm insane out there, like I'm on crack or something. Like, why is this dude got this stuff on in Miami, Florida? And so I begin to run. I'm like, okay, this isn't going to be enough. Like, I'm not going to lose 20 pounds just by doing this. I'm going to sweat a lot. But during these 2 days, I made a decision. I was not going to eat anything. I did not drink anything. I didn't tell them this last night. But I also filled two water bottles full of spit. For 2 days, I just chewed gum. It would make saliva in my mouth, and I'd spit it into the bottle, just to lose every bit of liquid inside of my body to get down to 155 pounds. I would go to the hotel, and I would go into the gym at the hotel, and I would work out, and I would do jump rope, and I'd be wearing the trash bags and the hoodies and the sweatpants and three pairs of socks, and I would sweat. I'd go back to the hotel room, take all that off, take a steaming hot shower for 30 minutes just to completely sweat as much as I can. I would put those things back on. I told the hotel, hey, do y'all got extra comforters? I need extra comforters because I'm going to sleep in all this stuff I'm wearing and these things so I can sweat during my sleep. And so for 2 days, I did this, and it was absolutely miserable. But it come weigh time, I was still a little bit short. I was about half a pound off. And in when you go to these big competitions, if I would have weighed 155.1, like, I didn't make the cut. I'm in the next weight class, and I'm, like, at the bottom. And so I had no choice. It was either I'm going to do this, and I'm going to reach my goal, or it was all just going to be a waste, and I suffered for nothing. And so I'm out there, it's time for weigh-in, I'm half a pound short. I put all this stuff back on and I go sit out in a black car in the parking garage and I turn the heat on full blast. The hottest it would go, the fastest the fans would go, and I just begin to sweat and I'm dying. It's hard to breathe. I call my godfather and I'm like, you got to talk to me because I'm about to pass out. This is so bad. And I sat out there for about 2 hours talking to him on the phone, just trying to stay conscious. And so it comes time for me, okay, it's my turn to weigh in. So I come out, I go back in, and I make the cut. I was actually a little bit under what I needed to weigh. So it was good. I went and I ate like heaven was on the, like heaven's dinner was right there on the table. I ate so much food and drank so much water. It was ridiculous. But I share that because I had to abstain from some things. If I wanted to do that, there was no way I was going to be able to eat anything. I couldn't even eat grassy food. Like I would have killed for a leaf. But you see, athletes, you hear them, they train with weights, they lift weights, they get strong, or these athletes that run races, they'll put ankle weights on their ankles, and then for months, they'll just run with little 2.5 pound, 5 pound weights on their ankles. And then when it comes time for the race, they fling them suckers to the side, and then they fly like they've just drank a Red Bull, and they got their wings, and their wings are on their feet. And so they do this in order to strengthen themselves. And a lot of Christians, they try to do this the same, but it doesn't really work. You see, we have the weight of sin on our shoulders, and they weigh us down, and they burden us, and we can't really move, and it does not strengthen us. Sin does not act like ankle weights where it's going to help you in the long run. No, sin does not strengthen us. Sin immobilizes us. Sin does not strengthen you for the battle. It weakens your defenses. And sin does not, it does not do all these things that we believe it'll do. It does not strengthen us for the race. It just prepares us to stand on the sidelines. I've seen people get saved. I've seen people get involved. And then temptation comes. First sign of temptation. Hey, man, you want to come have a drink at the bar? Man, I got church tomorrow. Oh, come on, man, just have one beer. Just come on, it'll be all right. You can go to church, have one beer, you'll be able to sleep that off. All right, fine, I'll go. And you can tell when people start falling back into their sin habits. They don't come around like they used to. They don't send you texts like they used to. They don't encourage you. They just kind of fade into the background. Because sin just has this ability to just draw us back into the darkness. And so when we let sin, we carry it around like a backpack, and we like this habit, I'm going to put it in my backpack. I like doing this, I'm going to put it in my backpack. Thinking that it's going to strengthen us and that we'll be able to do what God has called us to do, but still hold on to our sin, and it does not work like that. So we have to abstain. It makes me think of Daniel in the Old Testament. Y'all remember Daniel? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? What did he say? Daniel said, you know, the king made the declaration that everybody's going to have to eat this food and they're going to have to drink the king's wine. And then Daniel said, no, I'm not going to defile myself with the king's food and the king's wine. And he asked the cook, he's like, hey, man, just give us 10 days. For 10 days, let us just eat the rabbit food and we'll see how we compare to them at the end of the 10 days. And do y'all remember what happened? At the end of that period, Daniel and the other guys, they were completely in better shape than everybody else that ate the protein and they had the wine. Like, they were in better shape because Daniel and them decided to abstain from that sin that it represented. So if you're an alcoholic, you can't go to the bar. You just can't. You have to abstain. Or maybe you're a sex addict. And, oh, I know, oh, he just said the S word. People don't like talking about that. But I preach to youth on Wednesday nights. And this is so important because culture teaches us that we can live with the person before we get married. We need to drive the car and make sure that it's going to be okay before we really commit to buying it. And culture tells us that we need to just have sex with people before we get married because that's the thing to do. Sleep around. Give your soul out to people. No, no, no. God has given us a gift and we are to use it in the way that glorifies him, the way that he is designed. And so we have to make a decision. Teenagers have to make a decision. Adults even have to make a decision. I know, I'm 40 years old. I can have sex if I want. No, no, no. If you're not married and you're not living under that covenant that God has made, no, you still have to abstain. I know, it's tough, but you have to make a decision that I'm not going to give in. So we've made a decision to run. Our first discipline was abstain. Our second one is concentrate. It says, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. That phrase, fixing our eyes on Jesus, fixing our eyes, the word is aphorao. I practiced all week on that. I was like, I'm not going to mess this up. Aphorao, aphorao. Said it over and over. But this word means looking away from all else, looking only at that which fills the heart. In my experience with my walk with Christ, I've learned that when my eyes are not fixed on Jesus, when I let things come from the side and attack me, that's when I stumble. When I'm not in my word and I'm not focused on Jesus, that's when me and Emily have our little tuffles and our little battles. That's when the devil gets in and just creates division in us. When I'm not focused on Jesus, that's when I don't feel like coming to church. When I'm not focused on Jesus, that's when I'm worried about getting the approval of other people. And maybe that's you, because your eyes are not fixed on Jesus. You can't concentrate because you're focused on everything else. And so that's what we have to do. As many of you know, I'm from Tennessee. I don't dress like I'm country, but in my heart, I really am country. And my wife likes to go to this thing with her family every single year, the 9-day trail ride. And since we've been together, I have been going. And this year, I rode a horse for the first time ever. And it was awesome. I was scared to death the first time. I'm like, this big old horse, this big old dog or whatever you want to call it. I'm like, I'm about to put myself on the back of this and I'm just going to trust that it's going to lead me. And Emily's like, oh, just believe it. They're so sure-footed. They don't want to fall just like you don't want to fall. I'm like, okay, this is great. So I didn't ride last year. I decided, okay, I'm going to be a man. I'm going to give some brownie points for myself and I'm going to ride this horse. And so I begin to ride this horse. First time, it was good. I liked it. And I was still a little nervous, and then the second and third time. By the third time I rode on the ride, I was confident. Like, they gave me a big old horse. I'm like, man, I'm on top of this thing. Like, I'm loving it. And I got comfortable because I learned that the horse would concentrate. Like, you got your lead horse, and the horse that I was on would always just follow the other horses, like, in a straight line. Just like, okay, this horse is going here, I'm going to go here. And I didn't have to worry about it because that horse was concentrated on what was in front of it. And then I began to think about how nice it was to just be able to relax and just take in the beautiful trees and the butterflies and that little caterpillar that was trying to sting me and the horsefly that was biting my horse in the butt. Like, I could focus on other things because that horse was concentrated. And one of the guys that we were with and we were camping with, he used to be a horse jockey. And you know, you've seen those horses. Y'all up here, y'all like the Kentucky Derby. But those horses, they put those blinders on. They put those horse blinders on. Why? Because that horse does not need any distractions when it's going that fast. When it is running full open, it is trying to reach a destination. If it is able to see things that are coming to the side, they're going to see this horse over here. They're going to see a horse over there. They're going to see jockey over here slapping their horse on the butt and the jockey over here slapping their horse on the butt. So they put these blinders on so that the horse is focused on one goal, reach the finish line. And so that's what we have to do as Christians. We have to put the word of God around our mind as if it are blinders in front of our eyes. So that way when the devil throws things at us, we're not worried about trying to worry about them things or worry about what he throws at us over here. We are focused on what the task that God has given to me. That's why, we can clap, but that's good. That is why Paul said in Acts chapter 20 that I have nothing else that I'm worried about. He said, my only goal is to reach the end of the race and testify of the good grace that God has. And so that is exactly what we have to do. And so maybe what you're concentrating on is just filling your heart with despair. You have no hope. You wake up in the morning and you're like, it's Monday. It's the first of the month. How am I going to pay my bills? I ain't got no hope. God, what am I going to do? And your heart is just filled with despair. Or maybe what you're concentrating on is the fact that you're lonely. You live alone. Maybe your spouse has died and passed away. Or maybe you've never been married. Or maybe you've gotten a divorce. Or maybe you had kids and they've grown up and they've gone their own ways to live their lives. And now you're lonely. And so instead of concentrating on just Jesus and your walk and, you know, finding your purpose and walking in your purpose, you're focused on that loneliness, and that's all you can concentrate on. Or maybe you're concentrating on the fact that you're angry. Your parents never gave you the approval that you wanted. They liked your spouse, your siblings better. They always told them good job. They never showed up to your sporting events. They never came to your graduation, and you're angry at them. And so that's all you can concentrate is why was I not good enough? What's that afarao mean? Looking away from all else at that which fills my heart. So if we learn to concentrate on Jesus, our heart is going to be filled with Jesus because we fix our eyes on Jesus because what we concentrate on dictates the direction of our life. What we concentrate on dictates the direction of our life. So we've made a decision. We're going to what? Run. We've had our first two disciplines, abstain, concentrate, and our last one is endure. Endure. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Opposition from sinners. I want you to just imagine. Think of all the things that came up against Jesus. All the things that he endured to make it to the cross. He still won. It didn't matter how much the enemy, how much darkness threw at him. Whoever came in front of him, he still won the race. Peter could not stop him. But Jesus, you can't go to the cross. Well, get behind me, Satan. Yes, I can. The devil couldn't tempt him. I'll give you the world. No. His own mother couldn't even stop him. For some of you, you've endured divorces. You've endured your parents' divorces. You've endured deaths in your family. You've endured rejection. You've been abused physically, emotionally, sexually. You've been abused. You're addicted. You battle all these things, and you've endured so long that when we talk about getting involved in the church, serving the church, you're like, how can I even come in on a weekend and serve God when I am so tired already? I am so empty on the inside. I have nothing inside of me in order to pour out. And that's the outlook that we have, because it's the truth. It's so true. We endure and endure and endure until we are so numb and cynical. Well, we don't even care. We get to the point to where we don't even realize we're that numb and cynical. And so we have this endure, all these things, and then Jesus, he endured, but he endured in a different way. He endured because he knew the coming joy that was going to come 3 days after his death, when that tomb was going to be rolled away and be opened up, and he was going to be resurrected. One time, I ran the St. Jude Half Marathon. 13.1 miles. Yeah, I don't like running, but somehow I ended up always getting convinced to run. My buddy comes up to me and he says, hey, you want to run this St. Jude Marathon with me? 13.1 miles. I'm like, I'm good for maybe 10. Three might be pushing it. Three ain't a big number past 10, but it is when you're running. And I'm like, okay. And I was pretty ambitious. At this point, I was not competing anymore. I was simply training people. And I would work out with people while I put them through workouts. I would do the workout too. And at most, we would run 1, maybe 2 miles when we'd work out. And so I get the bright idea, hey, I'm not going to train for this 13.1 miles. I'm just going to test my soul, and I'm going to see how far I can go and what's the limitation before I give up and quit. Not very smart. I go to Nashville. I go to this race. And we begin to run. I had my buddy Javonte with me. And if you know anything about me, I've like broke my back. I've broke my feet. I've got all these injuries. And like I'm always really hurting. So we begun to run. First 4 or 5 miles was pretty easy. Mile 6 got a little tougher. Like, oh man, this is going to be a... It's going to be a long day, Javonte. Mile 7, tear my meniscus, my right knee, right here. I'm like, dang it, we got a long ways to go. And he's like, it's okay, man. I'm right here with you. What do you mean? He puts his arm around me. We run for a little bit, and I'm barely seeing my ankle just snap just then. And I'm running, and I'm keeping in step with him. And we start running. We might walk for a little bit. We keep running. But I always stayed next to Javonte. Javonte never left me. He stayed right by my side until we finished the race. Knees blown out. My meniscus. Tore. It's hurting. I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. But it reminds me of what Paul said in Galatians 5. If we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. And that is exactly what Javonte did. I had given all I could give, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to make it until the end. But Javonte said, okay, Jace, you can do this. I'm going to stay right here. I got my arm around you, step by step. I step, you step. I step, you step. We're going to do this. It don't matter if it's going to take us 8 hours. It doesn't matter if it's going to take us 10 hours. Everybody else can go home. We're going to finish this race. And so we finally, hours later, with my slow pace and one leg, luckily God blessed me with another good leg, we make it to the finish line. And I'm collapsing. The officials, they come over there and they meet me at the finish line with a wheelchair. And they set me there, wheeled me over, and then I end up getting up and I'm walking. I got me some Gatorade and stuff. But if it wasn't for Javonte, there's no way I would have been focused enough to finish. I would have gave up and I would have quit. That's exactly what God is for us. Jesus, he is our pace keeper. When we feel tired, when we don't have anything left endurance-wise, when we can't concentrate anymore, when we feel like we can't abstain and we feel like we can't run anymore, he's there to keep pace with us. We just have to stay in step with Him. Maybe you are thinking, well, this has been a great message so far. Like, it's been decent. Like, it's been pretty motivational. But, like, what's this have to do with serving? Like, how does that tell me I can make coffee? How does that tell me I can play on the worship team? How does that tell me I can run the production side of things? Fine. I'll give you the stereotypical serving in the church passage. Romans 12, verses 4 through 8. For just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. We have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. If your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it is serving, then serve. If it is teaching, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, do it diligently. And if it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully. Y'all four want to come up here and help me real quick? Y'all are the closest ones. Yeah, come on up here. Y'all ain't going to have to do nothing crazy. Don't worry. Just a couple backflips. That's it. Y'all just line up right there. I want to show y'all something. I'm going to show y'all something. I just read you a list of things listed here of things that we can do. But I've learned that it's hard to serve God if we don't first serve Him in our heart. We can do all these things. It really don't work out well if we try to like serve and do all these things and we haven't even given our life to Christ. Like, we can do it, but it's not to the full capacity of which God can really work through you in that sweet spot. So we've made a decision. Don't flip it yet. I've gave you some words. We made a decision. What are we going to do, church? We're going to run. Flip it around. We're going to run. We're going to abstain. We're going to concentrate. We're going to endure. These are the things that make up a race. We have to do these things in order to be able to run. Let's see that last one. Jimmy, you want to come up here again? Y'all scoot down. Just take a couple steps. This way. Yeah, sorry. We can run. We can run this race. We can do all that we can under our own ability. We can run, we can abstain, we can concentrate, we can endure, and we can try to serve and run this race. But until we put God first, we don't have grace. And so that's exactly what it says right here in the text. We have different gifts according to the grace given to each and every one of us. So we made a decision. We're going to run. We're going to abstain. We're going to concentrate. We're going to endure. But today, maybe you're in this place and you've been trying to run this race and you've been trying to endure, but you have never put God as the anchor of your life. The first one that's going to, the one that finishes it all. Put Him first and encounter His grace. You got